start our weekly Jewish history shiur. Before we start with the shiur and what time period we're going to cover, first I have to give a little introduction why we are learning Jewish history. Somebody came over to me this morning and said, besides the intellectual pursuit of the knowledge of what took place, why are we learning history? What's the point? So the truth is, it's a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk in Azinu, the two sheets over here. One sheet is the introductory sheet and the time period that we're going to cover for the next month or two. And the other sheet is the actual shiur where we're going to start. But keep them both together because one explains the other. So in the first sheet with the chronology, the pasuk is in Azinu, Zechariah Mois Eilam, Binu Shnois Dar Vadar. Recall the days of the world. Binu, understand the years of every generation. Ask your father and he will teach you, he'll tell you, your elders and they'll speak to you. So why we're learning history? Because it's a pasuk in the Torah. Zechariah Mois Eilam, Binu Shnois Dar Vadar. You have to understand, not just Zechar, not just to remember, but Binu, you have to Havana, you have to understand what took place. What's the advantage? Why do we have to understand? And why is it so important to recall the history, to understand our history of Klal Yisrael? So the various reasons which are given, and I think all of them are applicable. Firstly, the reason why we do history, and by the way, like all my shurim, people have questions, people have ha'aris, people have something to say, please don't be bashful, say it, but try and keep it to the topic at hand, because it's a history class, we can't go off on tangents. So, the main reason, one of the reasons why we must learn history, is because we as Jews, as B'nai Yisrael, we have to know what is a Jew supposed to be like. What are we? Who are we? Where are we coming from? Where we're heading to? What is our history? What is the optimal Jew? What is a Jew supposed to be like? What are we capable of? We can't just look at our generation, or even last generation, or 3-4 generations ago, or 500 years ago. We have to look back at our best times. Our best times, the closer we get to Har Sinai, these are our best times. That is what a Jew represents. That is what a Jew is. The Amshei Knesset HaGadoyla, the Zugois, the Tanoim. Even if you look back at the time of the Chazal, the time of the Gemara, what the Amei Haaretz, what the simple people of the land, what they were like, what they were careful about, it gives us a better understanding what a Jew is supposed to be. You know, we think we're Jews in the 21st century, that's what it is, we are it. It gives us an understanding what a Jew, what a Yid, what the Tzuras HaYehudi, what the look of a Jew should really be all about. Not only that, but more important, one of the fundamentals of our Yiddishkeit is the Mesorah, is the concept that things are handed down from generation to generation. And the key component of a Mesorah is to understand the concept of Yeridas Hadoris. Yeridas Hadoris means that we have to understand that we cannot, almost not relate to the past generations. I'll give you an example. You know, if you take your greatest gadol that you consider in today's generation, or the previous generation, whether it's Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, or you consider Rabbi Yashiv, or Rabbi Yashiv Ber Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik, whoever your greatest, or Rav Kook, whoever your greatest gadol is, if you ask that gadol, towards the end of his life, if he felt he was anything like his gadol, like his Rebbe from his youth, he'll tell you, my Rebbe, the Chafetz Chaim, what I am today is nowhere near. Reb Chaim Brisker, what I am today is nowhere near what they were. I'm nothing compared to what they were. And you ask them who they are, when they were, who were they? And they'll tell you, I am nothing compared to my Rebbe, Reb Kiveger. And so on and so forth. It goes generation per generation. Every generation looks at the previous generation with awe. They're amazed by the greatness of the previous generation. You multiply this by 15, 20, 30, 40 generations, it makes us understand a little bit his katnu seinu, what we are compared to the previous generations, what a Tana was like, what an Amora was like, what the Anshei Knesset HaGdoyla were like. It gives us an understanding that when we have a Mesorah, a direct link, a tradition going back all the way until Moshe Rabbeinu, we have Zechariah Yemos Olam. We can actually go back till the creation of the world it makes us realize the importance of our Mesorah, how it was meticulously handed down from generation to generation. There's a story told, and by the way, if you look in the Gemara and Shabbos, that's what Gemara and Shabbos says, and that's really the fundamentals of history. Gemara and Shabbos, Kuvi Bezum Mebez, Omer Abzeir, Omer Rava, Baal Zimuna, it's on the first sheet, Im Rishonim B'nei Malachim, Onu B'nei Anoshim. This, the Amora was saying, the Amora in the time of Bavel, was saying, if our previous generations are like children of Malachim, they're like Malachim, then Anu B'nei Anoshim, we're like regular people. But if we look at the previous generations like regular people, Anoshim, Anu Kachamorim, then we are no more than donkeys, we're like mules. Not even like the great donkeys of yesteryear, not even like the great donkeys of Bechnina ben Doisa, Bechnina ben Yoy, who knew they're not going to travel in places which was not belonging to them, they wouldn't eat for something which was tevel, which had no trumas and mice taken off. In other words, we're like regular donkeys. They understood the concept of Yeridas Hadoris, the concept of looking back at the past generation and understanding the greatness, who these people were, who the Tanoim, who the Amoroim, who the Anshei Knesset Gedola, who the Nevi'im were. We can't even fathom who they were. If we see a little bit of history, we understand, based on the Midrashim, what took place in that time, how they acted, it gives us an insight who we are, and it makes us realize that before we question or we ask or we think, why is it like this? We understand that the previous generations were so much greater, and therefore we accepted the concept of Mesorah, of Yeridas Hadoris. That's the second reason why history is important. Of course, a main reason why history is important is to see the Yad Hashem, to see the bigger picture. Many times we live in the present. A person lives in his present state, and many times he doesn't understand why things are happening, why things are taking place. In the time we live in, we cannot see the big picture. Chazal tell us already that Yaakov Avinu was supposed to go down Hoyetzorich Leired B'Shal Shaloy Shel Barzel. Yaakov Avinu was supposed to go down to Mitzrayim in chains. It was a gzere, it was a decree. They were supposed to go down for 400 years. He was supposed to go down in chains. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Mesovev, authored the events so that Yosef would be down in Mitzrayim first, and he would give Yaakov Avinu, his father, a royal welcome, and therefore Yaakov Avinu came down, rather than in chains, he came down like a king, like a melech. At the time when Yosef was sold, nobody understood, why is this happening? Why is this taking place? Looking back, 100 years later, you understand the concept, everything has a reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the big picture, you understand, Hine lo yonum v'lo yishon, Shemei Yisrael. Looking back at history, there are so many things, and especially in Bayesheni, we're going to cover the Second Temple period. So many things that at the time looked terrible, but looking back at it, we understand the godless, we understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu is watching over Klal Yisrael. Just to give you a few examples, Chazal tell us that the fact that they went down to Bavel for 70 years, or the first Golus after the Churban, after destruction of the Temple, was Golus Bavel. Bavel was a wonderful place for Klal Yisrael. They spoke the same language. Everything was prepared. They had Talmidei Chachamim. They had yeshivas. They had shuls. It was a paradise almost. If there was one place they had to go to, and it wouldn't be such a culture shock, it was Bavel. Everything was prepared for them in advance. If we see the history, we see how Kadosh Baruch Hu arranged everything in advance. He was Magdim Rafu Lamaki, prepared everything in advance so that they should go down to Bavel, and it should be a good place for them. Many examples. In the time of the Second Temple, in the time of Vayesheni, how the Jews were primarily focused on agriculture. We're going to learn about what their type of business were like and what people did in those times. And we find throughout the Gemara that they were very agricultural society. In a way, that's a tremendous bracha. While other people were traders, the Jews were primarily focused on agriculture. And that's a big bracha, because agriculture means that you're localized. You can't go too far. You're near your farm, you're near your home. With the result that if there would be Torah, if there would be a flourishing of Torah in Bayesheni, or the end of Bayesheni, or after the Churban, it was because everybody was local. A Rebbe, they had every town in the Galil after the destruction of the Second Temple. Every town in the Galil had a Rebbe with Talmidim. Torah was flourishing. It was the golden age of Torah Shebal Peh, of Gemara, of Mishnah, because of precisely the amount of work or maybe perhaps because of the poverty that was prevalent at that time, the whole social structure will understand everything had a purpose, everything had a reason. You see, when you study history, you see the big picture, and that's such a relevant notion for all of us to know. Today, you know, we're all living in the present. You study the history of Chazal, you go through Jewish history, you see a big picture, you see everything has a purpose, everything has a reason. Another reason why we must study history. History always repeats itself. History will always, what happened in the past, will always happen today as well. It might take on different forms. History tends to repeat itself. If you look, and this going, you see it throughout the entire Bayis Sheni, especially during Bayis Sheni. Just to give you an example, Ezra comes up after the permission was to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. So Ezra comes up, and the Kutim and the Shomronim, they want to join in building the temple. They want to join in building the Beis Hamikdash. And Ezra says, no, we don't want your help. And you can ask, why not? It should be all-inclusive. Everybody should be involved. Why don't you want the help of the Kutim? At least let them schlep. Let them do something. He said, no, he had a reason why. We'll understand the reason why when it comes to certain things, you include, and when it comes to certain aspects of Yiddishkeit, you do not include. You have to be sometimes exclusive. How the Chazal viewed the all the different separatist groups. And during Bayis Sheni, there were large amount of separatist groups, whether it was the Tzdukim, or the Hellenists, or the Essenes, and all these different sects that arose in the Bayis Sheni. How did our leaders view them? Where did they include them? Where did they not include them? Where did they compromise? Where did they not? That's such an important lesson. There's so many things that we can learn from it for our own, for ourselves. Basically, this year is not going to be just a history lesson. It's going to be analyzing the history, our history, in order what it can relate to us, what we can learn from it. That's another reason. A fourth reason, importance of learning history, is many of our halachic principles were developed during the course of Bayis Sheni. Whether it was various takanas of Anshei Knesset HaGdoyle, whether it was the sidur, the organizing of the tfilis, the davening, how to daven, and what to daven, we'll see it relates, dates back all the way to Anshei Knesset HaGdoyle. Whether it was principles in halacha, concepts, how to paskin, when we follow the majority, when we don't follow majority, we'll learn about the machlekes, the various rifts that there were in the academy in Yavne, after the Churban Bayis Sheni, when they decided when we make an issue, when we don't make an issue, when we stand on our principles, when we don't stand on our principles, when we decide we follow the majority, what's more important is the Nesi'ut? Is the presidency important, more important, or is the Av Beis Din, is Torah more important? All these difficult, weighty questions in Halacha will come to analyze, we'll understand it, and we'll see how they decided. Of course, it's relevant to us. We learn Torah on a constant basis, and we follow halacha, we have to understand how it developed, and how the first machlokes, what's the concept of a machlokes, why was there a difference of opinion, how is that possible, all these concepts we'll understand. Of course it relates to us on a constant basis, because after all, we follow the halacha. The format of this year is, we're going to show history, we're going to learn through history, mostly through the eyes of Chachomeinu, Zichronam Livrocha, to Chazal. We're going to use mostly Jewish sources to analyze our history. Now, that's not to say I'm not going to bring in from outside sources to give a background and what took place and what the social aspects was and what the political aspects was at that time period. But I want to focus through the eyes of Chazal, through our Jewish sources. You know, people always like to say, well, you know, we have all these Svarim and all these Tanakh and all these Midrashim and all these Gemaras and all these various places that we have sources on what took place. People always like to find other sources. Let's find an old hieroglyphic, or let's find an old tablet. People always trying to... That Leitehei Teira Shleimu Shalehem Kisicha B'teila Shalonu. An entire Torah, because somebody writes something on a hieroglyphic, I'm not discounting it. But we almost give more weight to some find which they try and decipher, and we don't know when it was dated. And the entire history, the entire secular history, many times the dates are retroactive. It wasn't that they wrote in this and this year, so and so happened, but rather various historians later on, whether it was Herodotus or different early historians, they predate everything and they say this took place in that time and based on different sources, and for some reason our own sources, we discount, we say, well, it's not like this, it's not exactly so, and we try and fit our sources with the secular sources. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to, yes, perhaps fit secular sources with our sources, and we're going to try and fit how they, see how they both fit together, but the main focus is going to be through the eyes of Chazal, through the history of Chazal, through the way Chazal wrote it down. If you look in the second thing on the sheet, on that first sheet, the Gemara Megillah tells us, Harbe Neviim Omdul Hem Yisrov, Kiflayim Kiyayse Mitzrayim. We had not 48, everybody thinks we had 48 Neviim and 7 Neviyos, 48 male Neviim and 7 prophetesses, 7 female Neviim. No, the Gemara says, Harbe Neviim Omdul Hem Yisrov, Kiflayim Kiyayse Mitzrayim. We had 1.2 million Neviim throughout the ages. Anybody who had some type of Ruach HaKadosh, some vision, was considered a Navi. Some were Nevi'e Emes, some were even Nevi'e Sheker. They got a vision, they misinterpreted it, they didn't understand it correctly, but Nevu'a Shehutzucha L'doyres Nichteva V'Shaloi Hutzucha Loi Nichteva. Why don't we have only the 48 Nevi'im? We only have the 24 books of Tanakh? Because these are the only ones which are relevant. The ones, the other Nevi'im, all the other ones, though they might be true, it wasn't relevant for generations to come. It was relevant at the time, but it wasn't a lesson that one can learn from for generations to come. What does this mean? This means that everything that is written in Chazal, every Nevuah, every Pasuk in Yeshayah, in Yirmiyah, in Malachi, in Micha, Psukim, or lessons that we have as a Mesorah, handed down in Midrashim, in all various Chazals, the reason why it's written is to teach us something. Otherwise, it wouldn't be written. It can be like the 1.2 million Nevi'im, which were not written. We're going to try and, from our sources, what could we learn from it? How is it relevant? That's why they were written. We must learn it. If it's Hutzlecha L'Doyres, it was Nichtevo. It was necessary for generations. That's why it was written. Therefore, we have to see what could we understand from it, what could we take from it. And therefore, any sources that we will bring down are going to be from the source itself. It's going to be from the Chazal itself. Every week I'm going to give out a sheet with various sources, and we're going to read it inside. It's not just a sheer lecture. We're going to speak about something, a topic. It'll be nice. We'll understand what took place. We'll learn it together. We'll be in Medayik. We'll see, wait a second, how does this Gemara, or this far-off Gemara over here, how does that say that this and this happened, if we know another Gemara seems to indicate something else? What really took place? We'll analyze through Chazal, through the sources of Chazal, various Midrashim and Tesefters and Gemaras and all types of sources of Chazal, will analyze what really took place. We'll get a clear picture of what life was like at that time in order to make us learn things, in order to make us understand what took place. And one final, idea which I want to bring across, that our history is Zichar Yemois Olam. It goes back till the beginning of times. We have meticulously written down from Yemois Olam, from Maisa Bracious, from the beginning of time. We have every generation just about accounted for from the beginning of time up until today's day and age. Just about. I know they have Svarim today that they show you Midar Ledar, every generation. Again, we're going to try and focus on our Mesorah, our handing down, meticulously written down from generation to generation. Again, if it's going to, it will not always coincide with secular dates or secular sources. We'll try and analyze it, we'll try and understand it, we'll try and answer them. But we're going to focus on our dates, on our Chazal, on our given over tradition from generation to generation. It was meticulously written down and it was meticulously kept for 5,000 years. Every word was kept to the detail. You know, there are various Mesorahs, Ben Asher, and different things which took place in the 9th century, and they had it written down literally from generation to generation, midukdak, every word, not a superfluous word, not a superfluous letter. Therefore, that is so meticulous, and it's so midaktik, we're so careful, that is going to be our primary source, and that's what we are going to follow. Okay. I want to start the Jewish history class, the Jewish history shir, with Bayis Sheni, with the Second Temple period. Why Bayis Sheni? For the simple reason, that is where the Navi ends. The end of the Nevi'im, just about Melachim Beis, ends at Bayesheni. Yes, there's Daniel, and there's Ezra, there's Nehemiah, but these are small snippets. Detailed, in detailed fashion, it ends basically at the Churban. Therefore, that is the part that we don't know. Everything else, we can open up a Navi, we can read, we can learn it, we can understand it, we can do this on our own. From Bayesheni onwards, these are parts of our history which are not so well known because it's not written down in an organized fashion. It's written throughout our literature and throughout Gemaras and Midrashim and Chazal and Tosefta's, and throughout the literature we have snippets. It is not written down in an organized fashion. And therefore I feel the correct or the place to start is Bayesheni. So before we start the actual Tkufa period of Bayesheni, we have to have a little bit of background, a chronology of events. Like this, we know where we're holding, what time period we're holding, what does it mean, Bayesheni? So I made a little a chart over here with all the various chronological episodes and events that took place, and we can go through them. These things, by the way, these are the dates that we are 100% certain about. These things we know for a fact. We know the first thing, Yetzias Mitzrayim took place in the year 2448. How do we know that? Well, we know, if you make the Cheshvan, any sefer will tell you exactly how many years from Adam to Noach, from Noach to Avraham Avinu, how old Avraham Avinu was, how old was Moshe, how old, when they were born. We know that 2,448 years after creation was the event of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's clear, we know that. We know, of course, that 40 years later, they entered Eretz Yisrael, Bi'as Haaretz. They entered Eretz Yisrael in the year 2488. That's also, we know, 100%. The next date, which is the year 2928, was Binyan Beis HaMikdash Aleph. The first Beis HaMikdash we know for a fact was built in the year 2928. Exactly 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. How do we know that for a fact? Well, it's written down in Malachim. Look at number one on the sheet. Malachim Aleph Peregvah Pasuk Aleph. Vayihi b'shmoinim shana v'arba me'oy shana l'teis b'nei Yisrael me'eret Mitzrayim. It was 80 years, 400 years from when they left Mitzrayim. Bashana Revi is the fourth year of Shlomo HaMelech's reign. B'chodesh Ziv, hu chodesh Hasheni l'melech Shlomo l'Yisrael, v'yiven habayis l'Hashem. When did Shlomo HaMelech start building the Beis HaMikdash? Written, etched in stone, written from that time, 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we know for a fact that the first Beis HaMikdash was built in the year 2928. If you want to see what 2928 means, so I put a secular date on the side. If today is 5,769, and this was in 2928, that's a difference of what? Almost 3,000 years, 2,800 years. I did the math. It comes out to minus 832, which is 832 before the Common Era, BCE, before they started counting the year zero. So that we know for a fact, starting from creation, 2928 was the building of the Beis HaMikdash. We also know for a fact, the last thing on the sheet, 3338. We know that the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed exactly 410 years after 2928. How do we know that? Again, the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Tesa Amud Aleph, the second thing on the sheet by number one, before number one, on the first sheet, before the number starts. Omer Rabba Bachan, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Ma'idichsev, what does it say? Yires Hashem toisiv yomim, ushnois reshoim tikzarno. What does it mean that Yires Hashem adds days? Yires Hashem toisiv yomim, zem mikdosh rishoim. She'omad arba meyois ve'esher shonim. That the first temple stood, the first Beis HaMikdash stood, 410 years. They only had 18 Kohanim Gedolim in the first temple period. In other words, they were Tosef Yomim. They lived a long time. Each one lived a long Kohuna Gedolah, was there for a long time. But the day, the years of the wicked are cut short. Even though it stood 420 years, the second Beis HaMikdash, Shimshuba Yosim Mishloshim Kahanim, that over 300 Kahanim Gedolim in the second Beis HaMikdash period, we're going to see, of course, why it was like that, who they were, and what took place. But it's clear from a Gemara, again, a Gemara, 410 years, the first Beis HaMikdash stood. If the first Beis HaMikdash stood in the 410 years, 29, 28, plus 410, is 3338. 3338 is the time of Churban Bayis Rishon. If you look, the pasuk in Yirmiyo says the last thing, "Vayomer Hashem Elai, Em Yamod Moshe Shmuel Lefonai." When Hashem told me, even if Moshe and Shmuel would stand in front of me and try and prevent me from destroying the Beis HaMikdash, "Ein Nafshi Al Amazeh," I cannot, my soul cannot be with this nation. Shalach me'al ponai v'yetzeyu. Let's send them away from me and let them leave. I will destroy the Beis HaMikdash. What's the gematria of Shalach? Shin Lamed Ches, 338. 338 years in the 4th century, in the 4th millennium, 3338. We know for a fact that is when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Yes, what's your question? Started building it. It took seven and a half years to build, but 410 years from when they started. So these dates are clear. They're etched in stone. Now, how exactly it corresponds with the secular date, that's a separate discussion. We will discuss it throughout, not now, we'll discuss it when, in a few months from now, when Ezra goes back to Eretz Yisrael, we'll discuss it, the discrepancy in date. Everybody always thinks that the year of the Churban Habayis is 589 before Kamnira, that's the year of destruction of the temple. Here it seems to be 422. Secular dates we'll leave on the side. I just gave that as an idea that we know what time frame we're talking about. But these Jewish dates, they're etched in stone, we know that for a fact. Now the years in between, and the reason why I put them on the sheet, is various kings that served in the first temple period. Of course, we know that the kingdom was split up, and after Shlomo's son Rehoboam, they had the Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda, the two separate kingdoms, and the Malchus Yisrael was wiped out 150 years earlier, where the Ashur came and wiped them off and was exiled, the 10 tribes, the 10 Shvatim, and the only ones that remained was Malchus Yehuda, which was Shevet Yehuda, Shevet Binyamin, and Shevet Levi, and that remained, and these kings, Yeshio HaMelech, Yehoyachaz HaMelech, Yehoyakim HaMelech, and Tzidkio HaMelech, these were the last four kings before the destruction of the temple. If you see on the sheet 3285, which is Yeshio HaMelech, there was only some 50 years before the destruction of the temple. The reason why I started with him, because that's really where the beginning of the Churban starts. Beginning of the Churban starts with an episode that took place at the end of his life. And that was really the beginning of the destruction of the temple. So really I can start from Bayis Sheni. Okay, we're all in Bavel, and what happened? How we go up to the second temple period. I wanted to give a better understanding, a better background of what life was like at that time, and therefore I figured I have to start from the Churban. At least, we're not going to go through the whole Churban itself, but at least the times leading up to the Churban. Where do I start from the Churban? Well, there was the Gullus, the exile, where the Jews were thrown out of their land, wasn't all in one shot. It was done in different time periods. It was done piecemeal. And therefore, the first Gullus was done some 20 years before the Churban, which is relevant also for later on. We're going to see exactly what the relevance is. And therefore, I decided to start from Yeshio HaMelech, which is really the beginning of the Churban Bayis Rishon. Yes, what's your question? Sweet.
You said it took 7 years to build.
7.5 years.
7.5. So, and they started it in what year?
2928.
2928. And then it
stood for 410 years.
So what happens
at the 7th? No, so it means once it started, it didn't stand in its completion. 410 years from when they started building it, 410 years afterwards it was destroyed. That's yes.
Do we know what happened from Bias HaAretz to Bias?
Of course. We have every generation written down. If you want, I can show it to you exactly. I didn't want to do it. I figured it's not for this year. We'll discuss all that. They had everything. They had, the Gemara says, David HaMelech was busy the whole day with Shilas. He was not just the king, but he was the Poisek, he was the Rav, he was the one answering Shailas. We had Torah, we had Torah Shebichtav, we had Torah Shebalpeh, we had everything else. We didn't have Machlokes. Differences of opinion only start later. We're going to see that happened in Bayis Sheni. We had everything. We also had a form of Tefillah, not Tefillah in its current form. All that, when we're going to get to the various time periods, we'll discuss it. But yes, we had the Shoftim, we had the Nevi'im, we have the Mesorah handed from generation to generation. I just started, I fast-forwarded to Yeshio HaMelech, because that's really the beginning of the Churban HaBayis. Okay. We have to start with Yeshio HaMelech, because that's the beginning of the Churban. Let's understand who was Yeshio HaMelech, what was the time like. So, we have to first understand this time period, which is 50 years before the destruction of the temple, 3285, which is minus 475 before Common Era. Bnei Yisrael, the Jews living in Judea, that's the way it was called, Yehuda, or Judea, or Eretz Yehuda, which was Yerushalayim and the south, the whole environs around Yerushalayim, was not a major player on the world scene. That we have to know off the bat. It was a far cry from the kingdom of Shlomo HaMelech, of David HaMelech. They were more or less contained in Eretz Yisrael, in that area. It was not a big player. They didn't have a big army. The big players at the time were Ashur, Assyria, of course, Paroi, which was Egypt, and Babel was the emerging power. Egypt was in the south, and that was the local superpower. After all, Israel was right next to Egypt. Ashur, which is Assyria, which was Turkey, Syria, that was the old superpower. And Babel, which is Iraq, which is really north and all the way into the east. It's a different area altogether. That was the emerging power starting to take control of world events. So that was a little bit the background information. They were a small, contained state. They were a far cry from what they were at the height of the kingdom, Malchus Yehuda. At that time, Yoshua HaMelech, his father and his grandfather, were both. His grandfather, of course, was the notorious Menashe, the son of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Menashe was known for his wickedness, his evilness. He killed, he murdered. Menashe, by the way, killed his own grandfather. His grandfather, Menashe's grandfather, was Yeshaya HaNavi. He killed, had his own grandfather killed and murdered. Such a person was this Menashe. And he was terrible, and there was Avodah Zorah rampant, and murder, and Tzicha, you name it. Everything went, it wasn't the prettiest of times. Yeshua HaMelech became a king when he was 8 years old. And the Pasuk in Divrei Yomim describes that when he was 8 years old, that's when he became king after his father. And already he realized that he's going to go back to the days of David and Shlomo HaMelech. He's going to do tshuva, he's going to rid Klal Yisrael of all their evil ways, he's going to put them back on the right path. So the Pasuk in Navi tells us that when he was 12 years old, he already got rid of all these Avodah Zarahs. He used to have all types of bamos, which are all types of mizbeachs, where they would have all types of idol worship, and he got rid of all them, and he said, no, we have to only use the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. One of the episodes which really changed, which was a change-altering event in his lifetime, which when he was 18 years old. He was a young man of 18 years old, and he decided to refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, even in the time when there were Ovdei Avodah Zarah and there were murders going on, the Beis HaMikdash was always the central component, the central part of the Jewish people. Karbanos always continued. The Pasuk says in Navi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, through one of the Nevi'im, through Yeshaya Navi, I don't want your Karbanos. I want you to do tshuva. I want you to do right. I want you to do justice. I don't need your Karbanos. We clearly see that Karbanos, the Beis HaMikdash, was always a central theme, a central part of Klal Yisrael, no matter what happened. So the Beis HaMikdash, he wanted to refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. And the story goes, look in number one on the sheet, Uvaytziyomes HaKesef, when they went and they dug, and they started digging and cleaning and changing the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, they took out, they found silver, Hamuva Beis HaShem, Motze Chilkiyo HaKoyen, a Sefer Teres HaShem, Biyad Moshe. They found an old Sefer Torah. There was always a Sefer Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, which Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, was always kept in the Beis HaMikdash. So they found this old Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Pasuk says a few Pesukim later, Vayich Yishmoy HaMelech Es Divrei HaTorah, Veikaz Begadov. Yeshua HaMelech heard that they found the Sefer Torah. He heard the words of the Torah, and he rent his garments. What was such a cataclysmic event that because they found the Sefer Torah, he tore his garments? So the Sefer Ikrim shed some light. The Sefer Ikrim brings down from, of course, a medrash. What did they find with the Sefer Torah? Well, it seems to be that the Sefer Torah which they found was always, or the Sefer Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, was hidden years earlier. The reason why it was hidden in the Beis HaMikdash, under one of the floors of the Beis HaMikdash, is because the previous king, Amon and Menashe, they were Yisrael, they were non-believers in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they would have the Sefer Torah, and they would basically shred it to pieces. And therefore the Kahanim, the good Kahanim in the Beis HaMikdash, decided to hide the Sefer Torah so that the king should not get a hold of this valuable Sefer Torah. So the Sefer Ikrim writes, let's read it together, number one. Ela lefisha Amon and Menashe ha'yoiv da'avodah zarah u'machisin es Hashem. The Amon and Menashe, his father and his grandfather, Yoshio's father and grandfather were kings, were over the avodah zarah. They would anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At she'omu Rabbeinu Zal ki Menashe ha'yekoydeh ezaz koreis v'skoyseh shem avodah zarah tachteihem. Menashe would go and in a Sefer Torah that he would find, he would rip out Hashem's name in a Sefer Torah, Yudkei Vavkei, and put in a name of an idol inside the Sefer Torah. Imagine this. L'fikach shochach echad min ha-kahanim shim yovel liyad ha-melech Sefer Torah shikos ha-Moshe shiktos ha-skosh ha-Moshe. So they're worried, this holy Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, he wrote himself, Menashe would go and he would rip out Yudkei Vavkei and put in an idol's name inside the Sefer Torah. U'babuzeh gonzeh ben shuras ha-binyan. So this Kohen went and he took the Sefer Torah and he hid it underneath the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. V'achagach b'mei Yeshua, sheshav al Hashem b'chol levav v'chol nafshav v'chol moedoy, k'chol tevas Moshe, in the time of Yeshua HaMelech, when he returned to Hashem, chipsu achas sefer zevelo matzu. They looked for the sefer, they couldn't find it. U'kshechizku es bedek habayis, and when they refurbished the Beis HaMikdash, matzoy chilkiyo, one of the Kahanim, he found it ben shuras ha-binyan, v'hoya be'enov k'moitza shalorov. It was a tremendous find. They found the sefer Torah, it was hidden underneath the boards. Sholach al ha-melech lemor, sefer ha-teira matzasi. They sent to the king and they said, we found the sefer. Kloma, sefer ha-teira yedua. The sefer Torah, the known sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu did, we found it. But like, don't say sefer Torah matzasi, I found a sefer Torah. Ha-sefer, we found the sefer Torah, the one that's always been in the Beis HaMikdash, we found it. U'mashachorat ha-melech ha-yeshiyahu kach. Why did Yeshiyahu, when he heard that they found the sefer, he got so nervous? The koras begot of he tore his clothes. Kishem shoma asas divrei sefer. Why? Kvishu rabbeinu zal biyushalmi. Chachamim tell us in Yushalmi, lefisha sefer teira shasa Moshe litchilasa hu niglal. The sefer teira was always opened to the beginning. Was always rolled up to the beginning to Bracious. Va'isa shah. But that time when they found it underneath the boards, matu hu niglal b'posuk yoylech Hashem oischa ves malkicha asher tokim alecha. They found it in the middle of the teichacha, which says that Kadosh Baruch Hu says that he will take you and your king to a faraway land. He's going to exile you. So Yeshua Melech heard this. He saw this as a sign. The Sefer Torah was opened to the wrong place and to such a bad omen. He said, this is not good. Not that he didn't know the Torah. He knew what the Torah means. But he was so scared because it was opened to the wrong place. He saw it as a bad omen. The pasuk in Malachim tells us, and in Divrei Hayomim, he didn't know what it meant. He was very nervous. So at that time there were three Nevi'im, three primary Nevi'im in that time. Who can tell me who the three Nevi'im were? Since everybody's so learned in Tanakh, Chulda is the third one. So Tzvanya was the Rebbe of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu HaNavi was only a beginning just to start becoming a Navi. So he was the junior, he had the senior prophet, who was Tzvanya, the junior prophet, which was Yirmiyahu, and there was a woman prophet, Chulda HaNavi'ah. So he had three to choose from. You know, like you ask a Shaila, you know you're only going to ask the Rav, more or less, is going to give you what you want to hear. That's, you know, once you go to Rav, you can't change anymore. So Yeshua HaMelech said, who am I going to ask? I'm going to ask the men, Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Yirmiyahu, after all, was a prophet of doom, like they say, right? He's like, who knows what he's going to tell me? And Tzvanya, I'm nervous. I'm going to ask Chulda HaNavi'ah. The more, you know, maybe the more warm, the more empathetic, see what she says. So they called her over and to tell her, what does this pasuk mean? And she said that it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to exile the entire land. They're going to be thrown out into Golis. But since you are the one who are, yes, doing the right thing, and you're bringing Klal Yisrael closer, La'aviyam Shemashemayim, it's not going to happen in your lifetime. So the pasuk says that Yeshua Melech heard this. He said, if that's the case, Olai, I have to do what I have to do. And he was even stronger. And the pasuk says how they made, that year they made a Korban Pesach, and he forced the entire Klal Yisrael to join together in a Korban Pesach that I think over a million Korbanos, or a million people joined in the Korban Pesach. It was a tremendous amount. Le'naseh kadover hazeh, like such a Pesach, in the time of Yeshua HaMelech, they hadn't had in years. It was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. He said, I'm going all out in order to be Mekayim as Ratzon Hashem, based on this event that took place in the beginning of his kingdom. Now, he was a melech for 30, what was it, what do you have over here? 31 years, he was a melech. Towards the end of his reign, that is when the event took place, which is really the beginning of the Churban. And that's why I started with Yeshua HaMelech. What happened towards the end of his reign, the last year of when he was in power? So let me give you a little background information. At that time period, like we said, The great power, of course, the great superpower was Ashur. Ashur was Assyria. Assyria was in Syria, Turkey. It was a superpower for over 200 years. But it was a superpower, it was fading. As a superpower, it was fading already. Why? Because they would go to all these countries, and they would subjugate all these countries. They didn't, you know, many of them would leave the king in place, and he would become the vassal of Ashur, of Assyria. And many times, and you know, over the years, they lost more and more contact with Ashur. They'd always pay tribute. That's what they have to do. They have to pay tribute, pay taxes to Ashur. And slowly, these small little countries became bigger, and they started revolting against Ashur. So Ashur, which was the great superpower, was slowly fading. It was the one that started taking over were the now Ashur, of course, I forgot to mention, is the capital of Ashur. Anybody knows what the capital of Ashur was? The great capital of the old world. Nineveh. Nineveh was the great capital. Yonah went to Nineveh. That Nineveh was the great capital, the great metropolis of the old Mesopotamia, the old world at that time. So that was the center, really, of you know, the modern civilization. Ashur, Assyria. At that time, primarily the Medes, Madai were the Medes, there were a group in that area as well as Babel. Babylonia started, they were, originally they were part of Ashur, but they had their individual kings who were vassals of Assyria, and together, the Medes, together with the Babylonians, they started gaining this big army, and they started driving back Ashur and slowly diminishing the kingdom of Assyria. And they had various battles until Ashur was really retreating. This was all the way, first they were all the way in the east. And they started retreating westward and northward until they held their retreated into a place called Carchemish. Carchemish was in what's today Syria, northern or north western Syria, which is Carchemish, was the city over there, and that's where they really retreated. So at first they were all the way with present Iraq today, and they retreated because of all these battles. Ashur, the great superpower, was basically diminishing in its size and retreated to Carchemish. That is where Ashur was the extent of this great power. There was another emerging power, which was always on and off. Sometimes they were strong, sometimes not as strong, which was Egypt. Egypt in the south. Now, Egypt in the south wanted, or they saw that when Ashur is retreating, Assyria is becoming smaller, so we can now reassert our power. We can go up to Ashur and we can start conquering some of their lands. Look, we can join in the battle against Ashur, against Assyria. So therefore, the king of Egypt, whose name was Paro Necho, he saw it as an opportunity to go battle against Ashur. So if you look in the pasuk on number 2 on the sheet, Beyomov, in his time, Olo Paroi Nechoi Melech Mitzrayim al Melech Ashur al Nahar Pros. So Paroi, the king of Mitzrayim, went up from Egypt al Melech Ashur to go battle against Ashur al Nahar Pros on the Euphrates River. Vayelech al Melech Yeshor Likosoi Vayimeseu B'Megidoi Kiroisoi Oisoi. The pasuk just tells us four words that Yoshua saw what was happening. He went to do battle against Paroi, the Egyptian king, and he got killed at Megiddo. That's all the pasuk says. In Divrei Yomim, it tells us a little bit more, but it doesn't tell us much more. What really took place with Yoshua HaMelech? Why did he go battle against Paroi? So the Gemara in number 3 on the sheet gives us a little bit more insight, a little bit more information. The Gemara says that Paroi Nechoi, Paroi from Egypt, went up to Ashur, and he decided to travel through Israel. After all, Egypt is in the bottom, Syria is in the top. He decided to travel through mainland Judea, through Eretz Yisrael, in order to go battle Ashur. So Yeshua HaMelech decided, I don't know, you want to go to war? That's fine, that's good. But why are you going through my land? Why do you have to go with your army through my land? Perhaps you're going to pillage, you're going to plunder along the way. Even though they weren't fighting, they weren't at battle one with each other, he said, I don't want you going through my land. So the king of Egypt, Paroi, sent back a message to him. Look in the Gemara number 3 in the sheet. Vayishlach elav malachim lemor, mali veloch melech Yuda, lo yalecho ata yoyim, I'm not fighting with you today. Kil beis mochamti, I'm going to my own war. What do you care if I'm traveling through your land? I'm traversing through your land. No, I'm not starting up with you. Let me go through your land. So the Gemara says that nevertheless, Yoshio did not want Paroi to travel through his land. He didn't want to come with a whole army. And there could be different reasons. The Gemara says because he didn't want, because look in the third column, the third paragraph in number 3. Why didn't he want? So what happened was, he decided to go stop the great Egyptian army at Megiddo. Megiddo was in the northern part of I believe it was northern part of Eretz Yisrael. Northern part of Eretz Yisrael. And he decided to do battle against Paroi Necho, that he should not go fight Ashur, should not go to Carchemish. So he went over there with his army, and right when he came over there, he was basically killed by the arrows of the Egyptian army. And the kinnah on Tisha B'Av, we say kinnah v'ikainin yemiol yeshio, where it describes in detail how he was basically a sieve for all the 300 arrows that pierced his body. The great king, Yeshua Melech, who by the way, this time was only 39 years old. He was 8 years old when he started. Just 31 years later, he died on the battlefield. So the Gemara said, why did he get punished? In other words, why did he get killed? Or what's the reason that he didn't even want to let Paroi fight, to travel through his land? He didn't want to fight. What's the reason? So the Gemara said, Moshe Ben Yechlon, Neman Nena Yeshua, why was Yeshua punished? He should have consulted. A major thing like this, you consult with the local Navi. My Darish, why did he consult? Beryl, he didn't have to consult because the question was, should he go fight him, should not go fight him? He consulted because he started reading his own psukim. He started, you know, he said, I'm the king. I have my own drushes. I'm a tzaddik. I can understand what the pasuk says. My Darish, it says in the pasuk, b'cherev lo yisavo ba'altzachem, it says a sword in times of peace. The sword shall not pass by your land. My cherev, what does it mean? A sword shall not pass by your land. Ilay mecherev sheina shalom v'ksiv v'nesati shalom bavitz. If it tells me you won't have any wars, it says already there'll be peace in your land. So what does it mean? There'll be peace in your land, and the sword will not pass your land. If there'll be peace, obviously there's not going to be a war. So what does the pasuk say? A sword shall not pass your land. Obviously, a sword will not pass because there'll be peace. El afilu shel shalom. It means that if you're doing the right thing, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you peace, then even Cherev Shal Shalom, even a peaceful sword, an army just passing by, should not pass by your land, your Eretz Yisrael, everything should be okay, you shouldn't have any armies passing by. So he said, he did not know that his generation was not up to par, he wasn't as great as he thought he was, and therefore he said, I'm doing the right thing, I'm doing L'Shem Shamayim, he said, Cherev L'Yisavo V'Altzachem, I'm a frumer thing, I'm doing the right thing, I'm doing what Hashem wants me to do, I don't want the sword to go through, because the pasuk says, he should have asked, he stopped coming with your own terrorists, your own reasons, you don't do this on your own, you have to ask the Navi, you consult with the Gadol Hadar, with Yirmiyahu Navi. He did not consult with him, and therefore he was punished. So the pasuk says, you know, the Gemara continues, "Kavenicha nafshe chaze Yirmiyahu shevase dekomachshon." And as he was dying, because he was killed in battlefield, or at least he was wounded in battlefield, and they took him out. And as he was dying, so Yirmiyahu passed by, maybe before he came back into Yerushalayim, and he saw that his lips were moving. Omar Shem Chasvach Lili Milsalei Mahagno Omar Agav Tzare. Maybe saying he's complaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe saying something wrong. Let me hear what he's saying. Gochin, he bent over. V'shamein, he heard the komatzik oleh dino anafshe. He heard that Yeshua HaMelech is matzik esodin. He's praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Omar, he said, tzadik hu Hashem, kifi hu marisi. Yeshua HaMelech, as he was dying, his dying words were, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a tzadik. I'm the one who went against his word, and he realized that what he did was wrong. And on that it says, Pasach Olea, he shaito, Ruach HaPeinu Mashiach Hashem. Yemiyonah said, this Yeshua was Mashiach Hashem. He was God's anointed. He was anointed by Kodesh Baruch Hu. He was a tzadik gomor. And on that we have, because of that, he made a special kinner, the special Echo. I think one of the prokim of Echo, the fourth parak of Echo, has 22 psukim. Yemiyonah Novi added that on as a memorial, as a kinner on Yeshua Melech. And the Medrash says that because he added on the 22 psukim of Eicha on the great Tzadik Yeshua, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu staved off the Churban by how many years? 22 years. This took place in the year, look at our timeline again. This took place in the year 3316. That's when Yehoshua Melech died. And therefore 22 years later was the Churban 3338. HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited with the Churban for 22 years because of the great tzaddik, Yehoshua Melech. Why was this such a pivotal point? Well, number one, it was important because this is really the last vestige of the Jewish people. This was Yehoshua Melech, the last one to try and bring it back to what Yiddishkeit was in its olden days, in its heyday. They had this beautiful Korban Pesach. This was it. And when he died, when he was killed, this really, it snuffed everything out of it. People, imagine the people at that time, they thought, okay, we're finally, because you have to understand, most of the people at that time, they weren't really, you know, of course, there was Avodah Zarah, there was Gilui Raya, there was Shfichas Damim. People were corrupt. But most of the people, they would listen to the Navi. They thought, perhaps, you know, there's something that we should change our ways. It was, we'll soon see, that it was from the top down, the kings down, they're the ones who had a lot of control over the people, and they're the ones who made all types of decisions, and they really took the people with them. So once Yehoshua Melech was at the helm, he was killed, and we'll see who the next one was, and the next two kings were not doing the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it became really a battle between the king and the Navi. That's really when things started to unravel, yes. Right. I didn't mention that, but that's what it says, that that the reason why Ein Doire Dome Yofer, meaning that he thought that he has a good generation, and therefore even a sword of Shalom should not pass by the land, they had the doors, and on the back of the doors, they had the Avodah Zarah. And the Pasuk says, the Medrash says, the soldiers would come and check, there's no Avodah Zarah, and they wouldn't see because the doors were split open, so they couldn't see the Avodah Zarah. Only after they left and the doors came back together, that's when you were able to notice the Avodah Zarah, and therefore Yehoshua Melech was not aware that that generation was holding, he thought they were on a higher level than that. Okay, but we'll see why his death, things started to unravel. A very, very important concept. After he was killed, so you can imagine, he was killed by Paroi. He was killed by the king of Egypt, Paroi Nechoi. After he was killed, so the Pasuk says in number 4 in the sheet, The second Pasuk in number 2, Vayakveyu avodov meis mimegidoi. They took him, no, he did die in Megiddo. They took him in the carriage, dead from Megiddo. Vayivyeh Yerushalayim, they brought him to Yerushalayim, Vigbereyu bekivrasoi, and they buried him in his kever. Vayikach am ha'aretz as Yehoyachaz ben Yoshiyahu. They took his younger son, Yehoyachaz, and they made him the next king. Yehoyachaz was the younger son, I think he was 18 he was maybe at that time, 19, 20, and they made him the king. Now you can imagine, there was a backlash against Paroi, against Egyptians. So who was Yehoyachaz? Yehoyachaz was in a camp, that time, you know, all the different sons of the king had different advisors and different courts, and his camp, his court, were the anti-Egyptian courts. So who did they make as the next king? Yehoyachaz. They overlooked the oldest son. The oldest son was Eliakim. They overlooked him because he was an Egyptian sympathizer. Who did they take? They took the anti-Egyptian camp, which was Yehoyachaz. Well, you can imagine, after Paroi went and he defeated Ashur up in Carchemish, the thing is, his army stayed entrenched over there for the next 4 years, and 4 years from now, he'll have a big battle with Babylonia. But Paroi, after he beat Ashur, and he was victorious, he came down, back, down to Israel, or at least he sent a messenger, and he said, who did you put over here as a king? Yehoyachaz? The one who's anti-me? Absolutely not. What did he do? Number 4 in the sheet. Vayasreyu Paroi Nechoi Berivlo Be'eretz Hamas. Paroi Nechoi was still in Rivlo, which is up north in Syria, in Eretz Hamas. Mimloich b'Yerushalayim. He captured him from being a king in Yerushalayim. He gave a large tax on the people in Israel. He said, you can't put this fellow over here. He's anti-me. I don't want you using Yehoyachaz. He took him into captivity. Paranecho said, you are under me. You see, Israel, Judea, Yehuda, was nobody. It was not a player even in the international scene. So Paroi said, you're putting your side, who you're making king? Yes, I'm not agreeing with that. He's anti-me. He got rid of Yehoyachaz, and who did he take instead? Vayasev, he took Eliakim, the son of Yoshiahu, what did he do? He changed his name to Yehoyakim. Why did he change his name? Well, he changed his name to show that I'm the one in charge. Your name is not even Eliakim. I'm giving you the name. So he took this older son. He was an Egyptian synthesizer. He took Yehoyachaz, the son of Yoshiahu, and he took him down to Egypt. He hadn't killed over there, or he died over there. And the new king was Yehoyakim. Now, this new king, Yehoyakim, was in the back pockets of Paroi. So he was a pawn, he was a real vassal of Paroi from Mitzrayim. In 4 years from now, which is in the fourth year, so if you look back on the sheet over here, you see 33:16, Yehoyachaz HaMelech, and 3 months later, 33:16, Yehoyakim HaMelech, because he only lasted for 3 months, he was taken away by Paroi Nechoi. Now, in the year 33:19, the fourth year of the reign of Yehoyakim, who was put there by Paroi, there was a big battle in Carchemish. Paroi was still, Egypt tried to assert itself, and was still up there in Carchemish. The one to come and do battle against Egypt in Carchemish was the emerging superpower, Babylonia. Babylonia, Babel, led by a brilliant general by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar went up to fight against Paroi in Carchemish. Now you imagine, for the Jewish people, we're not gonna have time to finish, we'll do next week the battle and the results of the battle, but you can imagine that the kingdom of Yehuda, the Jewish people, were in a very precarious position, because it depends who are they backing. Right now they're following Paroi. If in this big battle is going to take place, Paroi wins, then they are okay. But if Babel wins, then they back the wrong horse. So that's what's going to happen. Babel is going to go fight against Paroi, destroy, completely obliterate Paroi. He's going to run around Nebuchadnezzar unopposed in entire Syria, claiming that whole land for him, coming down to Eretz Yisrael, coming down to Palestine, which is the Eretz Plishtim, which is Gaza, Ashkelon, the whole coastal area, coming down. Yehoyakim, who is a vassal, swore allegiance to Paroi Nechoi. He says, my goodness, what am I going to do? I'm next over here on the list. So he quickly has to swear allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar. There'll be another battle in another year from now, and the roles will be reversed. And then he goes back and forth and back and forth. You see, once you're already not your own player, and you have to be dependent, either you swear allegiance to this one or to that one, just like the history changes on a dime, and from one battle to the other battle, you can back the wrong horse, that's how things started to unravel. Of course, Yirmiyahu HaNavi was always the one, he was always saying that Mitzion Tiposa Charoa, Babel, Nebuchadnezzar, he's an emissary from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's going to destroy the Jewish people. He's going to exile them as a punishment for all their sins. Yehoyakim, who in the beginning was such a vassal of Paroi Nechoi, you can imagine how he felt towards Yirmiyahu. Here he goes and he swears allegiance to the king of Egypt. And then Yirmiyahu HaNavi, the man of God, the Navi, goes around saying that no, Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and destroy everybody. Obviously, it was a point of contention between the king, between the Navi. We can see already, we can see the seed, the groundwork, how this was really the beginning of the end of the Bnei Yisrael. Next week we'll continue, we'll see what happened further when Babel, Nebuchadnezzar, did come down, how the first Gullus, the different various exiles, went around in different, took place in different piecemeals, in different stages.